Welcome to Built in the Bluegrass, a podcast dedicated to cool stuff made in Kentucky. We want to share with you how it was made, why it was made, and the story behind it. And now, here's your host.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Built in the Bluegrass. Today, we have Sarah Smith from Central Kentucky Tool, who's going to be talking with us about a lot of businesses in Kentucky are this, but we don't always understand what it is they do. And especially to the common person out there who doesn't deal with manufacturing or tool and die or how to turn any fabricated metal into something, et cetera. So she's going to discuss a little bit about that today, how the products that you see on the shelf or that you drive around every day have a lot more that goes into them than meets the eye. So, Sarah, how are you doing this afternoon?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad for you to be on here today. This is, as a Lebanon, Kentucky-based business, I'm originally from Central Kentucky, so this is in my backyard. So we love highlighting businesses in particular. You're the second person in the last couple weeks we've already had on from Marion County, so we've got that going for us. So what we want to do, Central Kentucky Tool, you know, that is... sounds general. You know, it sounds generic. You know, they tell us a little bit about what that is, what you all do every day, just a background so we understand what it is you're doing.
Yeah. Our business is a small woman-owned business here in Lebanon, and we are a machining and fabrication shop. We manufacture indirect parts related to the automotive and aerospace industry. So we supply parts that go on machines and robots that make or assemble the parts of a vehicle is a great example of that.
So they don't manufacture their own parts. So if I'm Toyota or the truck plant, I don't create my own parts. I set the specifications out and I send it out to a company like yours to create them. Is that the way I should understand it?
So we create the parts for the machines that are making the parts. I'll give you an example. On a line at Toyota, as an example, they would have multiple robots or machines that are putting parts together, creating parts, and we help those machines stay functional. Because if a machine goes down, they're not going to just buy a new machine. They're going to buy a replacement part, just like you would for your car. You'd buy a different spark plug. And that's what we create, is those replacement parts.
So it's almost like an aftermarket, you know, part that... Okay, cool. Yeah, because whenever you hear, you know, we're a machine and fabrication shop. I work with a lot of manufacturing. A lot of our listeners are people who are with the Kentucky Association of Manufacturers. So they maybe understand, okay, this is what a machine and fabrication shop does. But to the average person who's riding down the street in a vehicle, they don't know that, you know, each of these parts were manufactured, which is the reason we were doing our podcast, to just highlight some of those businesses. So, as far as the, what makes your all's company tick? Is it just cars on the road, planes in the air, just the fact that machines do break down, the fact that your customization is very essential? What is it that makes your company tick?
I think that being a one-stop shop makes us special. We are a small but mighty and very powerful business because we do offer machining, fabrication, paint, assembly, heat treat, all of those things under one roof. We are able to offer really great pricing to our customers because we can do it all in-house. And we have an incredible team of people that make that happen.
So that means a spec sheet comes in, or somebody says, I have this request, or they tell you, hey, here's an idea I have, create it for me. And then you're just taking it soup to nuts, putting the whole process together, and then giving them a finished product. That's your value proposition?
That's correct. Absolutely correct.
Nice. So you mentioned, you know, something that is very personal to us, is that being a small business, you know, the United States functions on small business. They don't realize it because the big businesses get a lot of attention. But even, you know, whenever you think about in Louisville, Kentucky, UPS, how many people just function by supplying UPS? How many small businesses function by supplying Toyota? There's lots of them out there. why, how come I don't need to deal with a big business? I need to deal with a small business when it comes to something like this. I would think, you know, big business, they're going to be able to get, you know, a lot better pricing whenever I can, I've got 1,000 employees here doing the same thing and I'm distributing them out to people all over the world. Is that not the case?
You know, I think a lot of people forget that with a small business comes a letter or kind of a version of customer satisfaction that you can't get with a big business. We are able to really take anything that you have and create an incredible product because of the people that we have here. And we have people that have been trained and received training specifically to work those machines or those types of fabrication, that laser. And combined, I mean, we have an incredible tenure of people. So I think that that sets us apart from a large manufacturer because we have a quality and a skill set that really makes us a little bit different.
So talk about that skill set. Do you feel your employees, when they come in, do they start off as they're already in a great position? Do you feel that you need to train them up? Do you think that they have been adequately supplied through their education system at that point? Where do you find most of your employees and where do you, when you find them, and where do you need them to get to really be, you know, to explain that it's not Henry Ford's, you know, assembly line as we talk about a lot?
Yeah. So we are a business of around 45 people. And I would say that for our tenure, our average tenure is around 17 to 19 years. We have people that have been here 35 plus years. And the majority of our folks have been here at least 5 years. We like having people that look for something different in a business. So we are not running a line. We offer a schedule that makes it a better fit for people that have families. We are employee first. So we have an ability to really cater to our employees and provide more of a family atmosphere that they wouldn't get other places. I will say we always look to build people up. We always want to increase their knowledge because that's how we're going to grow this next generation of machinists and fabricators, is by training them. We have a huge passion here. It's one of my biggest initiatives of really vamping up our apprenticeship program and bringing people in and pushing them through that so that they have a better skill set. If they want to walk away from here or even being here, that they can grow, because people don't want to stay stagnant. They want to have an opportunity to grow, and we have to make sure we can provide that to them.
So how do you make that cool? How is it cool to be in the industry that you're talking about? Obviously money sometimes makes things cool. But how do you, I mean, because we see it in certain sectors where, you know, the traditional jobs don't sound that sexy. How do you make it cool? Or how do you make it so that people want to do this?
I think our jobs appeal to people, to men and women that love working with their hands, that love having the ability to do something and work on something different every day. Our folks on the floor are probably handling 50 to 60 different projects a day. So they're not doing the same thing every day. And people like that. They don't want to manufacture the same thing over and over again. And we offer something a little bit different, I think, because you do have more control over it.
And by offering something different, you feel that that variety, that high level expertise, that's presumably more interesting than I plug my widget every day and that's all I do is put my bolt in my widget and I go about my way. So do you feel employees are adequately trained coming in? Usually, whenever you hire someone, or do you have to take them and get them pretty far down the line?
We need to take them and get them down the line. I would not say that coming out of just a technical school, they have adequate training. Like most jobs, you need experience, hands-on experience.
Cool. And you feel like your employees get that, and that's why you've had the tenure that you've had.
Absolutely.
So a lot of times whenever we're talking to, you know, businesses, particularly successful businesses, you know, there's always something that is, you know, it's not always, oh yeah, we've just got the cheapest product we've got. It's always like a culture. There's something that makes you tick, that makes your employees happy to be there, that makes them produce good results, that they're not just jumping over to Amazon for a dollar an hour raise. You know, talk a little bit about your culture that is producing that, or that keeps you moving in the right direction with the people you've got.
So One of the things that we focused on is giving employees the ability to have time for a life outside of work. After we bought the business, we moved to one shift, a day shift. We run 4 tents, 6 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., Monday through Thursday. If we do have overtime, it is only, we will only allow for it every other Friday for a few hours. And that allows for people to have time to do things that are really important to not only me as a parent, but to other folks as well. We want to be able to pick our kids up from school and take them to soccer practice and have time for those things. And being in a small business and allowing that for your employees creates creates employees that want to stick around because they're not having to work 70 hours a week.
So you hit on something that made me, at some point, you know, you mentioned purchasing the business. So that means there was a decision point. Do we keep this business here? Is there a better place to do it? Could it be jobs offshore somewhere else? What made you stick with Kentucky? What made you stick with Central Kentucky in particular in your current location? I'm sure your infrastructure already existing and people, you know, I'm sure that was part of it, but you know, why did you decide to stay or do you continue to plan to stay?
Yeah, my husband and I grew up in Kentucky and had lived kind of all over the U.S. before wanting to come back to Kentucky. This business has been in Lebanon since its inception, and it has been here 50 years. And we had no plans of moving this business. It is a part of this community, and we believe in keeping a business in the community that it started in because the people here are valuable. And they are what makes this business what it is. And we love the location that we have. We love this community now that we're here.
Good deal. Cut out there at the end. But I think last thing you said was you love the community where you are, which is very important because a lot of times, you know, you think about why our business is in a certain location and we always want to put something tangible on it. It seems like we do. Like, oh, the water for the bourbon, the, you know, the cheaper labor, you know, a doctor can come here and have a cheaper house. That's why... this is a little bit cheaper here. And there is those things that matter. And there's those tangible things that do show up on a spreadsheet, but there's always something like, do you know those intangible things that to recreate this or to have people that can do that or have the commitment from these people who are the families that, you know, we're in the same neighborhood. We do go to the same soccer fields that, you know, that's an intangible that doesn't always show up on a spreadsheet that keeps a business moving forward. So where do we see, you know, you mentioned you work a lot with automotive. You've mentioned that a couple of times. And I think you said aerospace earlier as well. You know, where do we see your products? Like I don't recall ever, you know, picking up a car or, you know, something off the shelf and having a Central Kentucky Tool label or any tool and die company for that matter. But where are we going to see your products or, you know, what are you helping move forward in Kentucky?
Yeah, you won't see them. We are a behind the scenes business, but that front driver's side window in your vehicle, that had to get from the glass manufacturer to the line at the facility. And we build a steel rack that holds those and puts those on a large semi truck and gets them from point A to point B. So we are behind the scenes helping create a better process, an easier process for those things.
Cool. So I'm going to see it in cars. I'm going to see it on planes, helicopters. What are some other products besides just vehicles that are out there?
Washing machines, dryers, any type of machined or electronic item, conveyor systems.
Like material handling system?
Yeah, absolutely. Even some different robots at spark plug facilities or even in distilleries. They run a specific type of process that we create parts for as well.
Cool. So yeah, those are the things that we like to talk about here because you do, there's so many times you think, oh, I see an Apple product, but you don't know how many people got it there. You see a truck on the highway and you don't understand how many pieces it took to get there. And so one of the things we like to focus on in particular with aerospace automotives is that Kentucky has a very big, you know, like a conglomerate of all these different industries and certain things in Kentucky. And what we're able to do is get them distributed out elsewhere. So logistically, Kentucky makes sense for several reasons, but we also like to talk about the culture things. So as far as Central Kentucky Tool goes, whenever we're thinking about businesses that you want to do business with, you know, we always talk about manufacturers do not do a good job. Some do. I'm trying to paint them all with a broad stroke. But manufacturers don't do a good job of talking to one another. You know, whenever I think of expertise, I think I have to go to Austin, Texas for computer expertise, or I need to go here for this. And oftentimes there's someone perfectly capable that is a lot more logistically, it makes a lot more logistic sense to do business locally. Who are you looking to do business with? If I'm listening to this show and I need to understand that Central Kentucky Tool can do this, we're right here in Central Kentucky and we're going to be competitively priced. Who needs to know that message?
Really any customer or any manufacturer that is looking for a partner to do engineering design, to do large project design work, replacement part production work. We really can be a one-stop shop for all of those areas. And a lot of the customers that we do have, we provide for them in not just one sector. It's for the engineers and also for their machine shop and also for all the different areas that they have, because we can be that kind of provider for them. So those are the types of customers that we're looking for, true partners that we can have.
So do you see that in any particular sector? Like, did you mention that, being in the distillery's backyard, is there a lot more that you could do for the distilleries if they just knew that you were right next to them and could help them out with certain things? Or is it another type of sector?
You know, I think distilleries are a very different style of business. They're not necessarily considered a large scale manufacturer. A lot of them in town, we do provide a lot of just small replacement parts for them, small projects that they have. But we don't see them truly as a kind of large customer sector, because the work generally isn't there in those areas. We do that as a partnership in our community. We give them a very, very fair price because they're in our backyard and we think it's important to be kind to your neighbors.
Good deal. So as far as the, I guess what your all's pitch is going to be is, hey, we can do this for you. We are local. We can do complete customization. You don't need to have out of state people. And that's one of the reasons we are wanting to highlight these businesses is this is here. Look in your backyard, look at people who you're already there. People that you can do business with that are your neighbors. And so that's why we're wanting to make sure, whatever businesses out there that can, get a takeaway from this of what it is you all can provide. It's going to be customization, tool and die. It's capabilities to take something from the very, basic elements into the final product and continuously do it to you at a very good price. So that is, that's something that we wanted to highlight. Tell us just real quick, because, we want to wrap up our show here, about what is it about your industry? I know you mentioned the small but mighty, but what is it about your industry you wish more people knew? I mentioned earlier, not trying to say it's not popular, but you don't see a lot of machine shops or tool and die makers that are, out in the public too much. So what do you wish people knew about your business?
I wish people knew that there are more women involved in this industry than they believe. We have women welders, we have women machinists, we have women owners, women office managers, we have all of the above. And I think that it's generally considered a male-dominated industry, but that's not necessarily the case. And I wish that more people knew and saw more women in the industry.
Yeah, no, that's great, because whenever we're looking at a lot of our manufacturers, we typically do see more men. Now, that's not exclusive, but we typically do. But then we'll go in some businesses and we'll see a lot of them. And you have to assume, that, and we know naturally that there are men and women in certain sectors, or there have been traditionally, and that is what it is. But I think a lot of times that is management's decision. You can make some changes, or you can try to get certain things that more women could be great at that are traditional men's jobs. So that's great. What's the male-female makeup of y'all's facility?
It's Yeah. You know, right now it's, I would say it's 98% male. But since we bought the business, we have gained 2%. And I feel like that's, you know, we got to start somewhere. And I work really closely with our technical school to speak to the women there and speak to girls there about going into different fields or industries like this, because I think it's important for them to know it's an option.
Well, that we hope you're making progress on that. That's I know with Cam, that is a big, big push, is to just get in the high schools, make people aware of this, because if it's interesting, then let's go with it. Like, if you find it interesting and you think that this is something that you would want to go into, we want you to touch it, feel it, experience it, get an understanding of how it works, and find out if it could be a fit for you. All right. So I've been listening to, you know, Sarah for the past 20, 25 minutes, and I want to do some business with Central Kentucky Tool. How do I get in touch with you?
Absolutely. You can reach us anytime on our website, cktool.com. It has our capabilities. It even has our list of machine options that we have in-house, and our emails and contact information for all of our office staff are on there, so you can reach out that way. So yeah, head over. You can also follow us on Instagram or Facebook. Or stop by the shop. We always like to have visitors. We always, always ask our customers to come and walk through our shop with us. Let us show you what we have as a capability.
Awesome. Yeah, no, that is good. We'll make sure that we get all of your channels, you know, plugged in here with our releases of our podcast. But thank you, Sarah. Thanks for being here. That was very interesting. You know, the part about bringing women into manufacturing is you're the first person that we've had in the last 10 episodes that have brought that up. So we're glad to make that more and more on the forefront, because I know it's been, at least for the cabinet and for the economic developers, as well as CAM, it's been a big push just to get that out there. So thank you, Sarah Smith with Central Kentucky Tool. Thank you everyone for listening to another episode of Built in the Bluegrass, and we will see you soon.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Built in the Bluegrass. We hope you're leaving this episode with a better understanding of the cool stuff made in Kentucky. If you haven't done so already, make sure you're subscribed to the show. This way you'll get notified as new episodes become available. Until next time.